Hey, Dan.
What up, guy?
You're into this fintech. What's all this I'm hearing about Current?
You're going to like this, guy. Current is a fintech company that's completely disrupting traditional banking.
Wait a second. Does that mean I don't have to drive to the bank anymore?
Yeah, exactly. I manage an important part of my family's finances from one easy-to-use app.
Well, I got to get this app, but where can I learn more?
It's super easy. Just go to current.com/OK, O-K-A-Y, and download the app. That's current.com/OK.
Current is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group, member FDIC, and Cross River Bank, member FDIC.
Will M&A pick up in 2024? Will this year mark the return of IPOs? Listen to Strategic Alternatives, a podcast from RBC Capital Markets, to get fresh insights on the trends and market forces impacting deal flow across sectors and find out how companies and investors are preparing for potential surge in deal activity and what signals to watch for this year. Listen and subscribe to Strategic Alternatives, the RBC Capital Markets podcast today, wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to OK Computer. I am Dan Nathan. I am joined with one of my favorite pod partners. That would be Gene Munster. He is the managing partner at Deepwater Asset Management. Gene, welcome back to the pod.
Pleasure to be here, Dan.
All right, Gene, we have one job today, is to go over three, I think, really epic stories that are going on in tech right now. We're recording this Tuesday afternoon. We know that NVIDIA is hosting their GTC conference. Take every one of those Apple product announcements of the last 10 years, sadly, since Steve Jobs has passed, if you will, and put them all together. And that's what we got going on. They're calling it the NVIDIA Woodstock, if you will. So we're going to break down all the announcements in and out of there. And we're going to talk a little bit about investor sentiment and valuation and how you guys are thinking about it over at Deepwater. The other one was this story out of Bloomberg Monday morning that Apple and Google are possibly discussing some sort of tie-up with Gemini. That is obviously Alphabet's generative AI product. And we know that Apple has been left in the dust of late there. And the last one, we'll spend a few minutes on TikTok and a proposed divestiture that could lead to a ban and what that might mean for U.S. social media companies. All right, Gene, let's get into it.
Awesome. Let's go.
Let's start with NVIDIA here. Can you go back in your career covering technology and think about a company that in such a short period of time has just absolutely dominated, really from a psyche standpoint, but also a market cap standpoint, and then also from a performance standpoint? I mean, what NVIDIA has been able to do in the last, call it, year and a half is something that I have never seen in my 25 plus year covering the markets, but specifically tech also.
We hit the ground running about the same time. It's been about that long for me as well, coming up on 30 years, so let's call it 25. And I've seen a lot of remarkable growth stories, everything from what's happened with Apple and Facebook and Google, Amazon, all of these front and center to those. And at the time, it felt remarkable, and they were remarkable. And what has happened with NVIDIA is two standard deviations to the right in terms of its performance. It's just that rare. And not only to have the stock increase like it has, more importantly, is just it's hard to grow a business when it's already a big business. And this was before things really got going. This is a multi-billion dollar business and tens of billions of dollar business. And now they're on track to do $100 billion 2 years later. That is remarkable. There is nothing that comes close to that. I think another piece to that growth story is what happened in the three quarters prior to the generative AI launch point, which really was Q1-ish of last year for them. Their business on average was down 6% year over year. It's a boom and bust business. It was down. And to go from down 6% to averaging up over 200% in the three subsequent quarters is just that. It's the most remarkable thing I've ever seen. And then there's the stats around that. But then there's, I think, the deeper point why that's important is that this doesn't happen by accident. The reason why NVIDIA took off is obviously they have great products, and obviously the concept of AI had been moving along, but we had this, of course, moment with GPT, but there was an understanding that triggered big tech and startups alike to recognize that this was going to be a paradigm shift. And that the amount that has happened in NVIDIA has basically been compressed. It's 3 years of Cisco growth from 96 to 99 was compressed in three quarters with what's happened with NVIDIA. And what's most important is that is an indication that there truly is a paradigm shift on their way.
That's what the stock market is saying, right? So we've seen this stock gain $1 trillion in market cap in 2.5 months or so. So let's talk about just what that pull forward means. So you just talked about 2 years ago, this company did $25, $26 billion in sales. Last year, maybe five or so. And then this year expected to double it again. Let's just say, so when you think about that and you think about this $1 trillion that was just realized year to date or so, couldn't you say whatever the paradigm shift is going to be, whatever the long tail of this is right here, is that in the near term, and again, I guess we don't know, but to your point about the law of large numbers, to continue to get this sort of growth, to get these sorts of beats, to get the expectations higher, right? It just gets that much harder. And so that's what I worry about here, Gene, because psychology, like the scale in which this is happening, you just used the example of Cisco in 96 to 99 and how it's just been condensed. That's the thing that makes me a little bit nervous. And again, we're seeing it not just in NVIDIA. Look at Supermicro on a much smaller scale. This was a $5 billion market cap. This was a year ago or so. It was in the Russell 2000. And now it just got added to the S&P 500 at an all-time high at a $60 billion market cap. You know, we wake up this morning, Goldman's leading a $2 billion share sale. Of course they should be doing that because investors couldn't get enough of it, all the way up to $1,100 from $100 last year. And now, so you want it, you got it. So talk to me a little bit about this dynamic, because the way in which it's happening, the speed in which this is happening, this is the thing where a lot of investors could make a lot of mistakes, in my opinion.
There's two pieces. There's the what is NVIDIA's business telling us about the paradigm shift? In the substance of the question, is there really a paradigm shift or is this a lot of hype to the next tech wave? There are two different things. A wave is very different than a paradigm shift. Waves happen every 2 to 4 years, paradigm shifts every 10 to 15 years. And I think that what we are seeing with NVIDIA and the growth in their business is an indication that this is a paradigm shift going on and we're going to see follow through with other companies. That's one side of it. The second side, which to your question is, what about NVIDIA stock? And if in fact there is a paradigm shift, the direction in it should be up and higher if the valuation is reasonable. I think it is. But I want to pause there and be clear that I think what we saw yesterday with their announcements, specifically their new chips, the B100, about how that's going to be replaced in the H200, the B100 is twice the speed of the H100. Coming up here in, we'll probably get their next earnings report in a couple months. We will get it in a couple months. When NVIDIA reports, they're probably going to be talking about what the uptake and interest is in the B100. And from our perspective, we think that we could see some slowing of their existing business. This, of course, is the Hawthorne effect playing in, where customers say, if we wait a little bit, we can get a better product. And in this case, in terms of the specs, it's double. In terms of price, it's going to be, call it 20% higher. So you could see an air pocket here, and they will explain that away as just that, that there's an air pocket. We're seeing some pause in demand as customers anticipate the B100, which is out later this year. That said, just given the frequency of good news on NVIDIA, that probably is a point as a pullback. And so we think that we're going to see a pullback. Based on what we saw yesterday, this is a big deal on their products. And that's something that I think investors should be aware of. There's another piece beyond the pullback and the quarter and the Hawthorne effect. There's the question about essentially if this is real, if this is truly a paradigm shift, then how is NVIDIA stack up against the competition? You and I have talked a lot about this. And the hyperscalers, you made great points. Hyperscalers are going to be bringing their own chips to market. They're not going to be spending as much. And ultimately, I believe in these four waves of AI that Jensen talks about. And I think that there ultimately is that beyond an air pocket, like we talked about with the Hawthorne effect, I still think that this company can continue to move higher.
That would probably be the best thing for most folks who believe in the paradigm shift, that it's not just a wave if you're looking out like years, okay? Because again, the point that I would just make is that if you thought last year, the couple 100% that NVIDIA rallied was a lot, just the 75% that it's rallied this year on that market cap that it already gained, that makes it that much more difficult, right? To buy into this sort of longer term vision after such a short period of time without any meaningful pullback, right? Even last year, after that big Q1 gap, in late May, the stock was range bound between $400 and $500. It gave you plenty of time to kind of digest what you thought the near term might be. And so that's the one thing I would just mention. One question for you though, if the last major computing paradigm shift was this convergence between, let's call it mobile and Wi-Fi and broadband and social, and right, isn't that kind of what we would kind of cluster in that late 2000s sort of period, if you will? I go back and I think of an Apple at like in 2008, 2009, after the first full year of iPhone, they had $50 billion in sales, right? And if you think about where the company was in market cap terms, it was a few hundred billion. So it was trading 4 or 5 times sales or something like that. So it did get to $3 trillion earlier this year. It did get to $300-400 billion in revenue. Maybe I'm off by a little bit or so, but the growth has slowed down dramatically. When you think about NVIDIA after these 3 years that are going to be hyper growth, if you do have this sort of pullback in a way, you just mentioned the fact that year over year, until we had this kind of AI, we were down year over year, right? We're going to see growth in this name really decelerate meaningfully, most likely in the next few quarters or so. And I guess that my question for you is, what sort of pullback would you expect when you think about this Hawthorne effect? Because when I look at analyst ratings on this stock, there are no bulge bracket firms that have a hold on this stock, let alone a sell. Do you know what I mean? So everybody's on one side of this train from a sentiment standpoint.
As far as what the pullback, I think we can get back in that 700-800 range, 750. I think there's, call it 10-15% downside. I think, again, they'll explain it. And those investors that believe in the paradigm shift will say, okay, we got a little bit of an air pocket. Stock sells off, I'll buy more, which will minimize what that downside is. And so I think that there is this opportunity for this pullback. It's definitely within the range. And I think there's another dynamic that is, we see those analyst expectations and we see what the stock's done and read the headlines and all the good news about NVIDIA. There's another layer below it, which is a lot of holders, what they have owned the stock for a long time, maybe own more of it now. They've been burned in this stock. This stock has had meaningful moves higher and lower over the past 5 years. I talked about what the growth rates were before things started to take off, but that was this boom and bust, whether it was crypto, whether it was gaming related. And there's some scar tissue around that. And that's why when we think about what the 2025 numbers are, the street's generally looking for about 25% growth rate and it's trading at right around 25, 30 times 2025 numbers. Now, you can debate whether or not those are the right numbers. You can say there's some downside to it because it's had such huge growth and the comps are hard, or it's there's upside. But I would say this, for a stock that has done what it's done, the valuation still is surprisingly reasonable on 2025 numbers. Now, Deepwater, we don't own NVIDIA, which there's a nuance that I want to highlight here is we're all in on AI and believe that this ultimately will exceed the hype in terms of the size of the transformation. We think we're in the front of a 3 to 5 year bull market that's going to end in an AI bubble. We don't think we're even close to it right now. But the reason why we don't own NVIDIA is we do that same math that you just did. Call it $1.5 trillion market cap. We think that the upside here is to $3 trillion over the next several years. That's a double. And we think there are other companies that can participate in AI that can do much better than that. I'm not trying to talk out of both sides of my mouth. I think this stock is going to continue to move higher. But when we think about the risk reward relative to what else is going on in this paradigm shift, we think there are better companies to own.
Well, it's interesting. And again, we just talked about that Supermicro. There's lots of folks that have been benefiting from this. Dell and the guidance that they gave. You saw the move. That stock had a 20% to new all-time highs based on just the narrative of how they will play in this space. When it comes to memory, look at Micron. They're going to report Wednesday after the close. I'm sure they're going to be telling a big story there. But there's also some other names, big mega cap names. Adobe last week was not able to articulate much of a Gen AI story or as much as expectations. And that stock got slammed the day after. It's kind of rebounded a little bit. Broadcom, Avago was another one I thought really interesting, right? There was a lot of expectations there. That stock has barely seen an uptick since they reported. And the last thing I'll just say about NVIDIA, and I've been wrong plenty on this name. I've been right a few times on this name, a more near-term focus, a less sort of fundamental, more sentiment from a trading perspective focus, obviously, than Eugene. The one thing I'll say is if this stock is going to come in 15% from here, it's likely to come in a lot more than that. And it's just going to be for that very reason that you just mentioned. How many investors have been burned, whether it was crypto mining, whether it was data center in past cycles, whether it was AR, VR, and metaverse, you know, whatever it is, like that snowball effect will just take hold. And because it's such a crowded trade and because it happens so quickly, that's just my trading perspective. But if you're taking a multi-year view, like if you buy some at 700 and buy more at 600 and buy more at 550, it won't really matter. On a mark-to-market basis, it might hurt a little bit, but it's important to remember how good it feels when it's skipping up $100 every week, the way it has been over the last couple of months, because it can go the other way too. That's just my two cents there.
Again, I believe that this is going to be a wild ride here. I think that the other piece that we haven't talked about is just competitively what they're doing, how hard it is to do what they do. And what they showed yesterday was that they're clearly in the lead when it comes to innovation. And I think that matters. We're in 2017, when we launched Deepwater, we had a manifesto, one of the four pillars. I'll start with the one that we just totally got wrong, which is virtual reality and augmented reality. That was one of the pillars, but one of them was AI. And so we've been doing investments in AI since 2018. Some defense companies, some brain tech, and a chip company too. It's called Rain. And Rain's making a lot of progress, but it is a really hard road. And we clearly hear about how advanced and how hard it is to compete. And they're well-funded, but I understand from the private side about just how tough it is to compete with what NVIDIA is doing. And again, you're going to need this compute power to enable what is some remarkable improvements in productivity that we've already seen.
Yeah. No, and again, the jury's still out on how these companies will commercialize some of these products, right? So it might be a race for all of this right now, where it just seems like the focus of any investor, any technology company, and it will move well beyond technology companies. Like that's the bet that you're making on a long-term basis, that every industry is going to have to embed this sort of technology. Hey, listeners, it's Dan here. I want to tell you about a company that I'm really excited about. It's called Current. It's a fintech company that's completely disrupting traditional banking. I'm a new Current customer. It's already helping me and my entire family manage our finances, all from one easy-to-use app. So try Current for yourself and get the app by going to current.com/OK. That's current.com/OK.
Current is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group, member FDIC, and Cross River Bank, member FDIC. In today's hyper-fast markets, it's never been more important to consider every option to raise capital, drive growth, and create value. Stay one step ahead with Strategic Alternatives, a podcast from RBC Capital Markets. In this season, RBC's experts will examine how corporates and investors are evaluating their strategic plans, reassessing their portfolios, and reallocating capital to help them lead today and define tomorrow. Tune in to Strategic Alternatives, the RBC Capital Markets podcast today.
You and I have spent some time talking about this. And when you talk about some of the pillars of stuff that you believe in at Deepwater, again, I know that autonomy and full self-driving, and I suspect I'm putting words in your mouth for a second here, that you're probably supportive of some of the things that Apple was doing in and around the car. We didn't know what it was. They killed that, right, last week. And now, again, we hear this was out of Bloomberg, a report. We'll put it in the show notes. You guys have all seen it already. But as Mark Gurman, like, suggesting that Apple is having talks with Alphabet about licensing. They didn't have too many details, but I'm curious to think what a deal would look like. We know that they have a search deal, Alphabet, where they take 36% of that search revenue, which equated to about $20 billion. That was on Safari last year on iOS devices. We were talking about it on Fast Money last night, Gene. It's probably some sort of extension of that deal, at least in the very beginning, because I doubt Apple is going to cede all generative AI development to one of their biggest competitors on so many other levels, if you think about it, which would be Alphabet. Thoughts on this, and what does it mean to you as a long-term bull on Apple. You believe in kind of their long-term vision for computing. They don't always have to be first, but they generally get it right. And at the scale that they're at right now, this is a really important decision that they make. And even if it's an interim gap sort of decision, there are other companies that they could partner with, Anthropic, OpenAI, and there was talk that they might be talking to them. What was your initial take to this? And was it a surprise? And I'm just curious, does it excite you as it relates to Apple and or Google?
My initial take was this makes sense that they would do something with Google, like you said, because of the historical relationship. The way that this works from my perspective is a little bit different than the search deal. The search deal is a flat fee, like you talked about those numbers, $15, $20 billion a year. And when it comes to AI, typically how it's charged, they charge on a token basis. So it's like a per minute usage, per query usage. And so it's hard to say how much that Apple will pay Google, but it just, from the highest level, it just made sense to me because of Google. I think Gemini is a great multimodal model. I think there's another piece that hit me right after was just how unprecedented this is for Apple to be talking about licensing part of a fundamental stack of tech from a third party. This is different than them licensing a patent to do X, Y, Z on your Apple Watch, which, by the way, they don't want to do. But the concept of them entering into a license agreement, them being the paying party here, is, I think, testimony to backing up 2 years of what has happened at Apple in the last 3 months. 2 years ago, the business was relatively cruising along. iPhone was growing at 5%. They were getting close to launching Vision Pro. They were strong believers in spatial computing, getting ready to talk more about that. And they were working on Titan, the car project, and that had some fits and starts. They never talked about, none in their prepared remarks in 2023 about AI. It would come up in the Q&A. What's happened in the last 3 months has been the biggest wake-up call about where Apple sees its growth coming. And I think that the company has ever had the speed of this wake-up call. And when I think about that speed, I think about ending Titan. Now, Titan, my guess is they're spending $4 to $5 billion a year on Titan. They spend about $30 billion a year on R&D. So this is called 12% more or less of what they spend in R&D. Like, they can afford to do both. They can afford to continue to do generative AI to build their own model and also do Titan, but they decided to kill Titan. And I think it is, the reason is that part of it is to save money. The other part is as a focus for the business to understand that how important AI is to their growth. And of course, in the last month, Tim Cook has talked more about it. And I really don't believe in coincidences. And there is a story that came out, Apple released the fact that they're now working on their own multimodal model. And then of course, the next day, Gurman comes out with his story about what Apple's in talks with Gemini and OpenAI to license a model. Whatever their path is, they may work with themselves. And like you said, it might be OpenAI and Gemini too. But I think what you're seeing here is a company that has gotten religion around AI and is trying to focus its efforts more clearly on benefiting from that.
I had the CEO of Perplexity on, Arvind Srinivas, on the pod a couple of weeks ago. And nice. I'm sure you're messing around with that. Ann Bordetsky from NEA, who led his Series A. And you've probably been following that a little bit. He's becoming a little bit of a rock star. Again, and this is not a large language model. This is a wrapper for large language models. And so to me, when I was thinking about this, and I was saying this a few weeks ago, and one of the reasons why he had tweeted something that I guess I had said on Fast Money. To me, I think this would be a layup for a company like Apple, at least as a way to, I don't know, just kind of watch one of their flanks a little bit. If a company like Perplexity had the ability to degrade the Google search experience, and Apple and Google have this really tight connectivity, right? As you think about Google being the premier search partner within Safari on iOS devices, the idea of having this app that if it's people download it and they pay for it, it's going to be in the app store if it's on iOS, if it's something they think that they can help market and integrate into iOS better, even though it's not a large language model, that one of these like models that of course that they're working on, at least in the meantime, if they were to spend $4 billion right now on something like that, which would seem outrageous, right? For all intents and purposes, when you think about it from a revenue standpoint, you think about it, it's not an LLM. That stock would probably go up $50 or $100 billion in market cap on just that announcement. I suspect when they do whatever they do, if they do something with a Google or an OpenAI, that's going to face a lot more regulatory scrutiny, in my opinion. And it probably doesn't look like a long-term sort of deal. I don't know. I'm just curious what your thoughts are on that.
So I'll make sure I'm checking here is that the idea would be is if Apple would do something with Perplexity.
They just buy it outright. Right. Like, they just pay $3, $4 billion for it.
From a concept, and Apple just did basically an acqui-hire around AI related to some manufacturing last week, but the small acquisition, but they have to be more inquisitive around AI. And the challenge with Perplexity is that you really bite the hand that feeds you. Talk about that $20 billion in licensing revenue from Google. The margin on that is high. Apple did in fiscal 23, they did $97 billion in net income. So probably $20 billion of that, 20% of it was from Google. And you would have, it's like Green Bay Packers, when they had Aaron Rodgers and you draft Jordan Love, it just creates a tough conversation. And I don't know if Apple's ready to have that right now.
Agreed. And it either makes it really difficult or it makes it very clear, adds a level of clarity about what this company, the direction that they need to go in a way. Because you feel one way first about Bard and Gemini. A lot of others feel very differently. Totally. Than you. I know that you're really. So let's talk about Gemini. To me, this headline also smacks of one player that's been left out of the narrative, doesn't have anything to talk about, and it's going to be very important for them to get their act together very quickly. And the other that was early on this, and we've been talking about this, that Satya laid themselves out as an AI first company going back, what, 7 or 8 years or so. But every major product launch that they've had over the last, call it 14, 15 months or so, has really not gone over particularly well, at least among investors. And I hear mixed things from the technorati, but I'm just curious. So if they were to do a deal, and again, we're probably not going to know too many of the specifics, you know what I mean? What do you think the market reaction will be for both of these stocks?
You've been generous enough to invite me on your pod for the last several earnings periods. And for those of you who've been following, what I've been saying is that Google is one of the best and most underappreciated opportunities in AI. We continue to own it at Deepwater, and I continue to believe that, but I've been wrong. The stock to date, the stock has not performed. And it's been basically a comedy of errors in my estimation, partially, mostly cultural driven about how aggressive they want to be and some of the curbs that they put in, some of the ways they've influenced the model. We don't need to go back. If you want to, we can, but go back and kind of recount all the mistakes that they have made. And I think that at the core, the question that I have relative, and this plays into what's going on with Apple too, is does Google have an advantage? And ultimately, I continue to believe that the data that they have in search is something that's unique. And that is what should separate models over the long haul, is the training data. And we haven't seen experiences from Gemini that have been on par with GPT. And I think eventually we will. The importance to Apple, the Apple relationship, we don't know, as we were talking about before, which features they'd want to turn on. If I think it makes sense, I hope they do something with Gemini, because I think it's a great model. I think they can start to unlock some of this personalized AI for Apple. But we talked about that $20 billion for the search deal. I think this is much smaller. Google this year is going to do, call it $350 billion in revenue. Apple's going to be right over, just over $400 billion, to put some perspective on. Obviously, Apple has more than half the business is hardware. 80% is hardware. Totally different businesses, but in terms of scale, they're pretty similar. I think that a deal with Apple probably adds 2% or so to Google's revenue, because they're going to be using their own model for doing some things too. And so the stock was up, today's tough day in the market. Yesterday was up, call it 6% on that. So the stock was overreacting to what I think was going to be the impact to it. I'm making a guess on what the impact is, but I think it was an overreaction. But it's not an overreaction if you look at it from the perspective that Apple is essentially endorsing something. Apple still has an upper hand when it comes to understanding how hardware, software, services, and eventually AI all kind of come together. And so I think that when I think about this from an economic standpoint, I think it's a small step for Google. When I think about it from an endorsement standpoint, for all the black eyes that they've had in AI over the last year, I think that the rally we've seen in Google's shares has been a little bit of a relief. It was for us.
It would be pretty fascinating if these two companies do tie up on this, they get a good narrative going. We see Satya at WWDC.
I can see it.
But it would be amazing that these two companies would be the underdogs. That is the thing. And then when you see Jensen Huang walk out at the SAP Center yesterday to 10,000 adoring fans, Apple can't even do live events anymore for things like Vision Pro, because there's just not excitement around around their product. Think about that. Think about where we've come. So to me, I find that really interesting. I think we're going to look back on this period and we're going to have some really interesting, whether it's waves, whether it's paradigm shifts, whatever. I think we're going to look back in this last 12 months and there's going to be a lot to debate here a little bit. I wanted to hit Gene really quickly because I know you've had some interesting thoughts on this. And I've heard some different takes from lots of different folks that I wouldn't expect to have on this. And this is about this bipartisan bill in the House, okay, that passed nearly unanimous to have TikTok be divested by their Chinese owner, which would be ByteDance, for two main reasons. It's national security for the most part, and the security implications and the like here. Thoughts on this? Because, you know, like, I'm of two minds as it relates to this. I think at any portion, I think you and me over the last 5 or 10 years could have made a lot of cases why U.S. social media companies are really bad. And now it seems like we're behind the ones that used to be bad because they're American ones, right? But we want to take a look at this one in China that seems to be all the rage, you know what I mean? No matter what age group you're looking at, whether it be here in the U.S., whether it be in Europe, and obviously in China, it's dominating, but it's a different form in China. Thoughts here on this and how you think it plays out for, let's say, Meta, for Google, and for Snap? Because these are the three companies that we're probably most focused on that will have the biggest impact no matter what happens with this proposed divestiture that could lead to a ban.
I love putting percentage probabilities on things. I give us a 50% chance, 5-0, that nothing happens. 25% chance for a ban and 25% chance for a sale. The 50% chance that nothing happens is just game theory on my perspective. I think this actually does move through the Senate, and I think it can get passed. And at that point, I think it moves to the Senate. Most people say it's a coin toss. It's probably 2-3 months before Senate takes a vote on it. Most people believe it's a coin toss at this point. But just given 84% of the House voted in the same direction, usually it's 50-50. 84%, I think, speaks to this is an easy punching bag, political punching bag China is. And so I think that it gets through there, and then Biden said he's going to sign it. Then we start the clock, that 6-month clock, which gets us past November. And if you're just strictly looking at the odds, not a political statement, looking at the odds, is Trump wins the election. And in that case, he probably goes and says that was a mistake and let's unwind that. And he probably has enough influence then as president to influence Congress not to override him. I actually think the odds are that nothing happens here. In the case that there is a sale of this, which I think is 25% likely, there's complexities to that because China said they don't want to sell. This is a political ping pong ball for that they're throwing back and forth with the US. So I think that China's going to be reluctant to sell. But if it does get sold, I think it sells for probably somewhere between 100 and 120 billion. There's several groups that could buy it. I think most likely it's a group of investors versus a corporate buyer. Fun trivia question. Before all this started, Walmart was the one who said that they're going to buy TikTok. I don't think Walmart's going to be in the game this turnaround, but I think that it would get sale in the case that happens. There's really no impact, probably a negative impact to small negative impact to Snap and Meta and Shorts, just because it's a US company, then easier to get advertisers. In the case it gets banned, then there's this fun jump ball that happens. And the jump ball is around time spent. They have basically the same number of users, about 180 million US users. That's Instagram, which includes Reels and what TikTok has. But TikTok has twice the number of minutes, that's because people tend to spend more time on TikTok. And TikTok right now is Financial Times reported yesterday it's $20 billion in revenue. I was at a number of 10 to 15, but it's the same number either way for the US. And so not just those dollars get jump balled between Meta and Snap and YouTube, but each of those companies can probably monetize that time more effectively than TikTok because they're US companies. Meta's the numbers I'm most familiar with because we are investors in Meta. Their US business right now is about a $50 billion a year business. And if there's a $20 billion jump ball, I think probably Reels gets the majority of it. So let's say that's 10%, they get 10% of it. I think that could increase their US business by 20%. The rest probably gets split generally down the middle between YouTube and Snap.
That's interesting that you mentioned that there could be multiple buyers. And again, it was Oracle in the cloud, Walmart. That was back in what, 2019 or so was speculated. Now, I wonder if there is some sort of financial buyer, maybe with Snap or something, and pushing those two things together, because Snap is obviously nowhere to be found as it relates to these sorts of UGC videos and the like here. It's interesting because I probably with you on this is the idea of a forced sale of a $125 billion sort of company that actually is on pace to probably be the next $1 trillion market cap company, let's just say all things being equal. equal if it was domiciled here is interesting. It's going to be dicey. But
one thing, Dan, I want to just on that for sale piece, apologies for the interruption, is that when we think about that, let's say it's $110 billion in value. And there's this kind of view that China would be walking away, China in quotes would be walking away from, assuming ByteDance is part of the ruling party, walking away from $110 billion. And that's only partially true. I don't know what the percentage ownership is, but they have ownership from outside of China. And so it's not just the amount that the PRC would be walking away from would be far less than the $110 billion.
And let's be clear, I think the PRC is probably less interested in the financial interest.
Exactly.
And the other things that they think that they might be able to have influence in or gain from a data
for
perspective,
sure.
Like in misinformation. And again, it's going to continue to go on for, again, let's just say it was voted into place, let's say, and signed by the president, then they have 180 days to figure this thing out. That probably gets delayed. But in the meantime, I think I saw it maybe in the information, it was, I can't remember whether it was year over year, but they were talking about some usage numbers on TikTok, maybe down high single digits year over year.
That surprised me. And I saw the headlines that their businesses started to slow, and maybe that's some related to Reels. I think that if it is slowing, it still has a lot more time spent than these other platforms.
No doubt about it. All right, Gene Munster, you are the managing partner at Deepwater Asset Management. I appreciate you working through these very important topics this week with us on OK Computer. I can't wait for you to come back. Hopefully, we'll do a bit of a preview for the Q1 earnings period.
Thank you.
If you like what you heard, make sure to hit follow and leave us a review. It helps other people find the show. We also want to hear from you. Email us at contact@riskreversal.com.